Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're taking the temperature of the markets through 2016 so far. We'll place what we've seen in context, looking back to the start of the year and considering how the dominant themes then, be it China's hard landing, US recessionary fears and more, have or have not shaped the months since. We'll look ahead too and assess what the dominant themes are likely to be in Q3 and Q4, from political volatility to the role of central banks. We start with a view from our contributors on how common concerns at the start of this year have shaped the past 6 months. Kiran Ganesh is UBS cross-asset strategist. He reminds us how the year began.
2016 started with a pretty big New Year hangover. We saw very sharp declines in global equities.
Mark Haefeli, UBS Global Chief Investment Officer, provides his summary of events. Did Mark's early concerns in 2016 bear out?
I think that this year is marked by a lot of complex events taking place kind of around the world, and that's likely to continue into the second half of the year as we look at things like an Italian referendum or the presidential election in the United States, which have investors kind of globally concerned how these events will play out.
Kevin Allison, columnist at Reuters Breaking Views, explains why, despite many of these pressures, people stateside are perhaps feeling slightly more confident than in Europe.
When we started the year, everyone was looking at the Fed's decision to raise rates and thinking, what is going to be the kind of impact on markets for the year? I think that at the beginning of the year, Brexit was a sort of distant, not too likely event somewhere on the horizon. Everyone thought that the referendum would go through without people voting to leave the EU. And so fast forward to today, and I think we're dealing with a really interesting combination of political risks that are very difficult to price. And I think, you know, by the same token, though, you know, U.S. stock markets are hitting record highs. It feels like people are still, at least in the United States, feeling a little bit more confident than perhaps in Europe.
Simon Smiles, UBS Chief Investment Officer for Ultra High Net Worth, shares his insights into the recent turbulent times.
It was an atrocious start to the year, looking at the volatility in January and February.
And we asked Bloomberg's Ewan Potts what have been the key market trends this year. Or has the story been more about specific events? Ewan tells us what he thinks the most important thing has been.
I think so far 2016 really has been the year of the central bank. Economists and politicians have really been putting emphasis on monetary policy coming from the world's central bankers in an attempt to get global growth going. We've seen the engines of the global economy spluttering over the last couple of years. Global growth is not what it was before the global crash, and economists really keen to get it going again. And a lot of emphasis has been put on interest rates and quantitative easing and other things being done by central banks to sort of fire up the global economy.
These early concerns in 2016 gave way to policymaker action, supporting markets through the rest of the half. But were they really reassured? Kiran Ganesh, again.
Generally, the response to the policy measures was good, but it wasn't unequivocal success. So, I mean, if we start with the successes, the Fed in the US decided that they would start to be a little bit less aggressive in terms of their commentary about rate increases, starting to talk about leaving rates on hold for a longer period of time. Markets took that, you know, relatively well. You know, similarly in Europe, where they cut interest rates further into negative territory, expanded the quantitative easing program, tried to make it a little bit easier for banks to deal with negative interest rates. Again, that was taken relatively positively.
Much of the discussion focuses around the pricing in of risk strategically. Has much of what we've discussed so far served as a reminder of exactly how challenging that is? We asked Simon Smiles.
I guess the answer there is, when it comes to risk, is actually in large part to look through the noise. Not obviously if one is a UK investor, you know, faced with the outlook or a more muted outlook for UK property prices and depressed economic activity, but for a global investor. The outcomes from the aftermath of the UK referendum was actually as one might have expected. You know, interestingly, FTSE 100, so the large cap UK stocks, have actually risen since the UK referendum. And they've risen because of the sharp fall in the pound and the translation benefit that gives them with respect to roughly 75% of their earnings coming from offshore. Conversely, the mid cap stocks in the United Kingdom exposed to the domestic economy, which has had a more depressed outlook post the Brexit vote, clearly have underperformed and still well underwater. Spanish and Italian stocks have underperformed Swiss stocks, et cetera, et cetera. The point I guess I'm making here is, from a global investor perspective, while politics will continue to play a short-term role, it's actually not as important, arguably, for the direction of global assets and as unpredictable as it might feel in the moment. Economic growth, central bank policy and earnings continue over the medium term actually be far more important drivers of global risk assets than politics, despite the impacts on near-term volatility that politics can clearly have.
So it's hard to price in political risk. We asked Kevin Allison, should we be doing better?
I think that the impact of these extremely big political events is just very hard to gauge. You saw sterling fall sharply after Brexit. That's markets expecting a recession in the UK and expecting a long period of turmoil for Great Britain. But no one really knows exactly how that turmoil is going to manifest itself. It's a directional indication of problems ahead, but it's not necessarily a very rigorously thought through quantification of risk. That doing those kind of calculations, it's not the same as modeling the earnings of a company crashing. It's a little bit more difficult just because there's so much complexity and so many moving parts. There was a joke back when I worked in the stock market. What would happen to the Israeli stock market if Iran were to acquire a nuclear weapon? And I was talking to someone who said, well, the stocks would probably fall 30% and then bounce right back because that kind of risk is so impossible to price. No one would do it ahead of time. And afterwards, they'd say, well, surely there will be some way out of this bad situation. So markets, I think, can be very unpredictable in that way. If risk were easy to price, there'd be no jobs for anyone on Wall Street. So I think pricing political risk, it's always a problem. We seem to be entering a period where political risks in some of the stronger Western economies like the UK are unusually elevated. But political risk is something that investors deal with all the time. Someone's always there on the other side of the bet willing to make a trade. So you've got to think that things will eventually sort themselves out.
If we look at the bigger picture and assess Europe's political woes, how destabilizing has this been to markets? Here's Ewan Potts.
On the markets, we've seen what we call a flight to safety. So when these big events happen, investors go to safe havens such as the Japanese yen and government bonds. I'll talk more about government bonds later, but of course, the biggest political event in 2016 really must be Brexit. 23rd of June, 52% of the UK voted to leave the European Union. It wasn't something voters were expecting on either side in the UK, and it certainly wasn't something that the markets were expecting. Now, there's one thing which markets hate, and that is uncertainty and things that were unexpected, and this was both of those things. And I think we're set for a period of extended uncertainty, not just in the UK, but across Europe, of course, because nobody's ever really left the European Union before. So there's no manual, there's no guidebook as to how this is going to pan out. And it's going to take a long time. The UK has been intricately linked with the EU for 40 years, and it's going to take a lot of time to unpick that relationship. And there's going to be a lot of uncertainty around that.
When it comes to political risk, maybe investors shouldn't focus on that at all. Mark Hayfley explains why.
What we saw with Brexit is that the politics ultimately, at this point, has taken a backseat to a strong policy response and continued growth out of economies like the United States. And we would suggest that investors need to focus less on these political complexities and more on the fundamental growth that we see in economies and how the policymakers continue to respond.
Political risk is obviously a key theme. And now we're in a post-Brexit environment too. What does Kiran Ganesh think could happen next?
So we've had this shock now with Brexit, but we did see that policymakers have come in with some sort of quite firm stances to say that contagion from Brexit won't be permitted to spread particularly wide. So we've seen the Bank of England coming out with pledges of more liquidity, the Fed starting to sound like, again, they'll hold back on increasing interest rates, the ECB talking about adding more liquidity. So it seems as though the sort of short-term impact of Brexit on the rest of the world does seem to be easing. I think where we will need to look at some lessons from Brexit will be just in terms of capacity of some of these political events to surprise the financial markets. We've obviously got the US elections coming up towards the end of this year. There's a vote coming up on the Italian constitution. Again, that could raise some potential questions about the Italian banks and also more broadly their membership of the European Union and Eurozone. And similarly in Spain and Portugal, where there's sanctions that have been put in place due to their missing of deficits targets, again, could raise further questions about their positioning in the European Union and the Eurozone. So a few different political risks to come up. So I think that's just something that markets will need to be cognizant of. But for now, it does seem as though the Brexit-specific risk to global markets seems to have been abated by some of the policy measures put in place by the central banks.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look ahead into the second half of 2016 and consider how political turbulence and the decisions of central banks could shape the coming months. So looking ahead to the second half of the year, one tricky challenge is to attempt to ignore much of the political noise and focus instead on whether growth is growing to continue. That's Mark Haefeli's advice.
I think you want to look through a lot of the political noise, focus on if the economic growth continues, if credit spreads remain low so that borrowing costs remain low for companies so that they can continue to expand, and what the policy response is. And you know, the other thing I'd say that we find very interesting is, despite all this complexity, a simple asset allocation portfolio diversified globally has performed very well, and we would suggest that that would continue to be the case.
Another key second half trend, are central banks still doing all they can? Could that be the story through until 2017? And if they are, will that reassure investors, along with the fact that presumably while growth is weak, at least it's still positive? Kevin Allison again.
There was this very curious thing just after the Brexit vote when the pound crashed and gilt yields fell, but somehow the FTSE 100 stock index was up in the days immediately after the Brexit vote. And part of it, I think, was the fact that FTSE 100 is a very global index. A lot of the companies there get their revenues not from the UK, but from overseas. But also, I think it was probably pricing in some hope that central banks, just like they've done during the financial crisis, will step into the breach and use the tools that they have in their arsenal to counteract any of the worst effects of Brexit. So I think that what we're seeing now is markets looking to central banks for leadership.
When mulling events on the radar for the second half of the year, look to bonds, advises Ewan Potts.
There are now $10 trillion worth of bonds which have a negative yield. So these are bonds which if you buy them and hold them to maturity, you lose money on. That seems like a very strange concept, but that is the extent of the flight to safety. So as bond prices go up, the yield goes down, and many of these government bonds are right around the world are yielding less than zero. So that's a really interesting picture to watch. We're going to be watching monetary policy as we go forward. We have five central banks with negative interest rates around the world now. Switzerland, Denmark, Sweden, and the whole Eurozone and Japan. Now, that's we could be reaching the end, the limits of monetary policy in terms of stimulating the global economy. So that's something we'll be watching. A couple of political events that keep your eyes on. Before October, Matteo Renzi will have to have a referendum in Italy about changes to the way that the Italian system of government works. The idea being that he can get it to work rather better than it has done in recent decades. And then in November, of course, eyes will be on the United States when we have that presidential election, and eyes particularly on one man, Donald Trump. And not just for the controversial things he says politically, but also some of the controversial economic statements he's made. Investors are a little bit worried about some of the things around protectionism and world trade, which have been emanating from Mr. Trump's statements. So a lot to watch. And of course, Brexit, that story only just starting to play out. We've got a new government in the UK, Theresa May hoping to steady the ship a little bit. But we still don't quite know how the UK is going to exit the European Union, and that will play out in the rest of the year and, of course, into 2017.
Let's look ahead now at more potential investment areas for Q3 and Q4. Cycling through a number of areas from US stocks to credit to the US dollar is Simon Smiles.
With respect to US stocks, we expect US stocks to have an okay second half of the year. We're modestly overweight. We think we'll see earnings growth in the order of 3%, with buybacks continuing to help the direction. So not aggressive return target, but we think that market will modestly eke out gains. With respect to credit, we're not as positive on US high yield as we have been in the past. In fact, within credit, we prefer European high yield, where we think we're much earlier in the credit cycle. The central bank support by the ECB is much more supportive, and yields compared with defaults are much more attractive. And when it comes to the dollar, we're not taking a strong overall bet there. I mean, the one position we are playing is being short the Australian dollar versus a modest long in the US dollar. But in terms of taking big tactical bets with respect to euro dollar or cable or the yen versus the dollar, for the moment we're sitting on the sidelines.
But does invariably political risk remain one of the critical things to watch? Well, yes, but also keep an eye on the data, says Kiran Ganesh.
I think that the political risks are something certainly to be watching for in the next half. But aside from that, obviously we need to keep a watch on the economic data that comes out from the big regions, so the US and China. As I said, so far that does seem as though that's been relatively immune to any particular issues around Brexit. We saw really strong jobs growth from the US last month. China seems to be ticking along okay. So, you know, while it can be fun to watch politics, I think it's going to be obviously crucial in the second half of the year to see how economic data in the US and China holds up. Because if that is positive, then I think a lot of the political risks are probably looking to be overstated.
As we gaze on into 2017, is everything looking, well, a little stretched? Indeed it is, explains Kevin Arson.
Just here in the US, for example, U.S. bond yields have fallen to extreme lows. They're to some of the lowest levels ever on treasuries. And stocks are also hitting record highs on the S&P 500. So where do you put your money? It's a really difficult question. There's low inflation. The central bank has, you know, the Fed has raised rates. That means that they've got a little bit of ability to either delay the next rate raise or even lower rates if things get really bad for the economy. So there's some firepower there. To me, I think the key question for the next several months that investors need to be asking themselves is, given low yields, stocks probably look relatively attractive, but how long do you really think that the sort of market highs that we've hit now can hold out? And if there is a disruption in the bond market where bond yields suddenly start rising again, does that lead to big problems for stocks? I think that's the key question. I don't think there are any easy answers. I think people are going to have to be keeping a very close eye on the Fed and on markets to see what the best bet is.
Through all of this, many analysts and strategists are trying to find dislocations caused by volatility. But what do these actually look like? Simon Smiles has more.
I think when we look around, you know, particularly for ultra high net worth clients, we're trying to find dislocations caused by the volatility that we've seen in markets. And one, you know, perfect example at the moment is longer dated European dividend futures. It may seem a little bit off-piste, and for most professional money managers, it's indeed out of their benchmark, so they can't focus here. However, if you look at our Eurostoxx 50 dividend futures, so these are contracts which settle on the cash dividends paid by Eurostoxx 50 equities. What's been priced into markets is extraordinary. If one goes out the next 5 years, the market is implying a significant fall in the level of dividends paid by European companies. If you just have a flat outcome, same level of dividends paid in 5 years' time as today, you're talking about 30% upside to the longer day-to-day European dividend futures. Now, to put that in context, that's bigger than the fall we saw in the Great Financial Crisis. So trying to exploit these kind of off, out-of-the-mainstream dislocations where very extreme views and perhaps too extreme views are being priced is something we're spending a lot of time. They're exactly the kind of things which are flipped or which are created by short-term volatility around political events such as the UK referendum.
And that's Simon Smiles, bringing us to the end of this 93rd edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24.